mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 458. I'm Adam, and argue, mainly. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Don't move, Perry! Don't move! The tree won't hurt you!
Ian Bissett.
Oh, do stop squabbling and get on with it.
And Mary Lang.
A hyperactive Perry. Too ghastly to contemplate.
We don't know whether we may have others later because Debbie's prioritising a family barbecue, apparently, so I hear. Not quite sure she's got her priorities right there. And Robert's got a bit waylaid in the early hours of the morning. But apart from that, we're all here. So, hey!
Yay!
Yes, this week we'll be looking at the Mark of the Rani, not the Time of the Rani, which Kirby almost accidentally watched. It's the Mark of the Rani, which is emphasised by the Master saying Mark of the Rani a couple of times in the story, just to reiterate why it's called the Mark of the Rani.
The Mark of the Rani.
Yes.
Mark of the Rani, are you sure?
Yeah.
The Mark of the Rani.
Right, so we begin with the title sequence, and
it's quite
alarmingly for our current showrunner, it's by Pip and Jane Baker, which that's rich coming from him, isn't it, eh? Because he didn't like Pip and Jane Baker, did he? Right, so
I didn't used to like Pip and Jane Baker, but then I discovered later on that they're lovely.
Oh. Yeah, I'm sure they are. To their credit, when they were getting all that stick about, I think it was Time in the Rani, they were getting quite a bit of stick about, and from Chris Chibnall as well, who was in the giving stick audience at that particular program,
yes.
They actually went on and spoke up for themselves. They didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But they did.
I was watching the interview on this particular DVD,
yeah.
and I somehow had the impression that Pip didn't talk a lot, but he was talking a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I'm just going to make a technical adjustment.
Lillian Robbins says, late again.
Yes. Well, hang on. If she's watching for her benefit, I'm just going to put my face mask on. Right, got my face mask on. I might not be able to see anything because my glasses start steaming up.
Sorry.
Have we got our face masks on, everybody? No? Okay, well, it's just me then.
Yeah, just right. You.
You don't want to get that fly sick.
Don't let me laugh. Don't make me laugh, sorry, because it does enhance the steaming up of my glasses. Okay, right. So, we're in a sort of...
This humorous.
What is? My elbow? My elbow? Come on! That was right off the cuff. Jeez. I've not been watching my TikToks. Right then, so we begin with the... they're in a coal mining place, which is beautiful location for this particular story. Obviously, it is what it is. Hey, I like that phrase too.
It was actually a bit of a screw-up in the scheduling department, and they actually ended up having way more... location time and filming time for the outdoor stuff, and so they did so much more on film, which the director really loved because she liked working in film. So it ended up you got a lot more of this stuff to see because they had so much more time outside.
Yeah, it's beautifully done, especially some of these shots which would nowadays be done with a drone, where they obviously lifted the camera up to get the higher view of the, I'm going to call it a village.
They did that little crane shot, didn't they?
And the BBC.
Have you ever been up to this museum? It looks fascinating.
No. But again,
if you'd be that far, what, 3 or 4 hours?
Be quiet.
It's nothing.
The BBC costume department, again, bang on. Maybe a little bit too much strategically placed dirt around the faces. And there's some great camera work going on. The camera's going up and down and long, wide.
Yeah.
Great camera work. And then with these three guys who just finished work, they're a bit tired. And they need a bit of a bath. That's what we call a bath.
Up there they call them baths. Yeah.
Now, Adam, is there a reason why you're wearing that mask?
That's for Lillian's benefit, because I had my picture taken on my own with nobody anywhere near me without my mask on, and she asked why I wasn't wearing my mask.
Even she says you're a little muffled sounding, so.
Well, I've got a mask on.
I know, but, you know, for radio, you really want to...
Yeah, but...
she says, right, you don't need to wear a mask now.
There we go. It's off. Now I'd be contaminating myself at all available opportunities. Right then, so...
What you get up to in your podcasting studio is completely up to you.
Yes.
True. Right. Except we want to be able to understand you.
You trying to say you can't understand me?
Sorry, what?
So these three guys follow this sort of old hag from Blackadder into a bathhouse. And I grant you, I actually was having previously watched this story. I didn't even consider, oh, yeah, how would they have had a bath in those days? Mm. And you know, nowadays, obviously with viruses going around, you wouldn't dream of having a communal bath. I know they've got their own little individual tubs, but I wouldn't think they'd be particularly...
They'd fire the next guy in there after that guy was done and probably not really change the water either.
Yeah, and also those tubs that they have these baths in, full of water, must have been blimmin' heavy. So how do they empty them?
They probably just had people who were bucketing water in and out of there to clean the workers as they came
I can't imagine it was a Rani.
And the later you arrived, the cooler the bath water was and probably the dirtier.
But there were so many...
First, the clean water.
But if you think about it, there was quite a lot of people coming out of the mine, just these three guys, and there was three baths for three guys, and there was no queue outside for further baths. So it was only these three guys were prepared to get clean. Anyway,
it was just some steam. It was Sunday, light shift.
Oh, right.
Master.
Oh, God, here we go. Mark, that's the Rani at the moment, Kirby.
Master.
No, it's the Rani at the moment.
It's the Rani.
Yeah.
Well, the Rani says that, something like, you guys are decided to come straight off of your shift, so you get the hottest water. So they're alone because they are early.
I've had a notification come through, everybody. This may thrill or sort of... What's the opposite to thrill? Dismay. Thrill or dismay in equal fashion, as Toby Haydock once said on this show. Because Robert is ready to come on.
Yeah.
So, yes. So let's go for it then. It's good. We haven't really got far into the episode, which is unusual. And Kirby hasn't said much, so this makes it even more unusual, the fact that we haven't got this.
I've kept trying to get a word in edgewise.
Okay, let's do the official introduction. And Robert Haynes.
George of the jungle, watch out for that tree.
Oh, I see.
Trying to be original.
Yes. Don't worry, Robert, we haven't got very far.
Good.
Right, well, we've got to the bit. Sorry, Ian.
That's okay.
We've got to the bit where they just got gassed in the bathhouse.
Oh yeah.
Mm, very powerful gas that, because they go down really quickly. My slider stopped. And then we move on to the TARDIS, where Perry's dressed in a very strange outfit because she.
Yeah,
thinks she's...
I mean, like, what prompted that dress?
It's awful. Isn't it?
Oh, here we go again. It's the Rani, Kirby.
The Rani.
There's a deleted scene. It's actually on the DVD where she's getting ready to go. They're going to go to Kew Gardens, and she's dressed up for that. Unfortunately,
she's got her clothes on.
Because Kew Gardens has not opened in this particular year.
Okay.
But still, finally, someone's wearing an outfit that is more ghastly than the doctor's.
I didn't have anything come from
me. Wearing something at least shape-wise reasonable for her, for the period, rather than her going around in day glow. Well, that one's kind of day glow, but you know.
Sorry, I haven't got anything coming through on my feed. That sounds like I'm hungry. So, words-wise, for some reason, I can't see anything coming through verbally on the feed. So I don't know why. If anybody else can see it, that'd be great, because I can't see anything coming through.
And there's been several comments.
Good old Facebook letting me down again. No, nothing's coming through. I can't see it. But I'll see if I can go on the other feed. I can't even see. Hang on, let's refresh. I'll press the refresh button. This is podcasting in the highest order.
I'm waiting for mine.
Oh, there it is. Ah, now I can see the comments coming through. So Lillian Robbins said, I still wouldn't cosplay that outfit. Laurie Nick said, hello. I was watching the end of part two. Really did enjoy this one. Not the feed for the comments, but I'll let it slide. Lillian Robin, the 20 megabyte bath podcast. Bath podcast. Terry Mars, Adam, you are too muffled. Thank you for that. it says 11 comments. I've missed some. What's going on?
I know, but it no more come through. I don't know why that is. But if we don't get
early ones, I think I had a hiccup.
They just kind of go away, it seems.
Yeah, there's a hiccup. Facebook hiccuping as per blimmin' usual. Yeah, it's so wonderful, isn't it, Facebook? It's absolutely bang on. I'm sorry, I'm getting cynical. So the Doctor and Perry are in the console room, and he's trying to take her to Kew Garden. So for some reason, she decides to wear an odd-looking outfit. So meanwhile, back in the bathhouse, what did you say?
I said in the bath.
Couple of people wearing Are You My Mummy?
You've heard of Flanders and Swan.
I'll start again. A couple of people wearing Are You My Mummy masks drag a couple of unconscious people along the floor. There's a great bit where the TARDIS has just arrived in a coal bunker and Perry is not looking particularly interested in being there. And then the Doctor pulls out a gadget. And then she suddenly becomes very interested in what the Doctor's got in his hand. So I quite like that particular scene. And
So
off they trundle. And then suddenly in the bathhouse, the three guys who are having a bit of a towel fight with each other.
Ooh. Yeah.
Would have been more fun.
Those coal miners.
Yeah, would have been more fun, though, if they'd done it while they're in their bath attire, really, because... But they've had this bath, and now they've got all their filthy, dirty clothes back on, so that's going to work rather well for them.
They never took the bath.
Did they not?
No.
How do you know that for certain, Kirby?
You never see any water,
do you? Took their clothes off to begin with.
They were knocked out, then they were carried around by the guys in the gas masks, and then they woke up and had a fight.
I'm sure that was implied rather than actually guaranteed. the Doctor could have gone off having a couple more adventures in that time. Yeah, the Rani bathed them. That's it. Thank you.
No.
Yeah, the Rani just like, hang on a guy. Put them in the tub, give them a good wash down and dress them up again.
Anyway,
evil plan. I'll wash these miners.
So these are the lads come out. They've obviously eaten too many Haribos because they go around and they just knock over what looks like a baked potato cookery thingy.
Yeah, it looks potatoes.
And the Doctor and Perry carry on looking around. They find a scarecrow on a hill. This is quite reminiscent of another Doctor Who story in featuring David Tennant.
Those were hot potatoes, by the way, according to the script.
There
was supposedly at the beginning when they're going through the when a kid runs, he says, go over and get me a hot potato.
What's that accent?
I don't know what it was.
Nor do I.
They could have pulled in John Perkins.
I've got a rewinding video cassette. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask at the moment. Lillian Robbins says hiccup. Did I? I can't remember doing that. Meanwhile, back to the story. So this chap's riding his horse and cart and comes across a couple of, three rogues, and they start tipping everything over.
The same rogues that were in the bathhouse.
What?
Master.
Yeah,
I didn't hear what you said, and it's the Rani. For God's sake, how many times have I tell you? Jeez. So I'm just waiting for this tape to rewind, and I'll be able to hear what you're saying properly. So it's nearly done. Like I said, podcasting of the highest caliber.
Oh yeah,
it's all real on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Right, it's nearly around that. Right then. So anyway, this chap gets accosted by these louts. or Luddites, as they're actually called in this episode.
But and this is about 20 years after the Luddites did all their riots.
Me. You like to spoil things, don't you, Kirby?
Yeah, but this was started
That's what
again.
You pay me for.
No, it isn't. anyway, so he's... Yeah, so he say they him and Perry save for any further violence, and
When I was watching this with Fred yesterday, she really liked what that horse was doing, stamping its foot. She was wondering why is it doing that?
Yeah. Oh, is that it? Sorry, I thought you'd carry on. Right, so they end up going into the village on the cart that of the man that they. Gave a bit of a hand to. Right. And it's interesting to notice that the costume that the Rani's wearing, the hood of the costume, is very reminiscent of the sort of fabric that the master was used, you know, the deadly assassin master had.
Oh, yes.
On his hood. Oh, you noticed that, did you? Or you're just trying to take credit for my observation?
I'm sure it was B.
And now, while she's having a bit of a grumble because there's loads more people turning up, now you can say master because the master's there.
No, it's the Rani.
anyway, so the doctor sort of goes around having a chat with a few people. And then the Stevenson is mentioned, which makes the doctor exceptionally excited. And...
I had to explain George Stevenson and the rocket and all of that to Fred.
All right.
This entire story never really explains anything about him. It's simply assumed if you're British, you know.
You should know it because it's quite important. Hang on. I'm just going to make a technical adjustment.
Well, I get what you mean is that... just by inciting its name wasn't enough. We needed a little more for the educational.
Yeah, I mean, the old times of Doctor Who, they would have, because it was very educational in the old days, wasn't it? They would have actually given a bit more explanation. But in this era, I think maybe the idea was to hint about it and make people want to look it up. Right. But obviously,
that moved into the 2:45 minute. Episode period, too.
There was an excellent extra on the DVD for Blue Peter going to this museum and explaining all the stuff about it. I believe it was done, the Blue Peter segment was directed by the same director who directed this.
Oh, okay.
Who was the director?
It's a woman, Susan something?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Dinner, Sarah, something?
Hang on a second, I will tell you.
Sarah Hellings. Hellings.
Well done, Sarah Hellings. Robert. Okay. Impressive.
Whenever I see a woman's name show up, you know, in a directing a doctor, oh, there's another one, yay.
Sarah Hellings.
That's what Robert said, for goodness sake, Kirby. Trying to steal everybody's thunder.
How is this being weird?
It's Sarah Hellings.
Right then, so the master's sort of watching everything that's going on because he's up to something. That's unlike him, isn't it? He uses his phallic device to kill the dog, which is found that quite upsetting actually.
Eliminator. Oh God.
So moving on forward a bit, the doctor, because that's the dog that was keeping the doctor and Perry. Trapped in a room for a short period of time.
Very salivating, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And then the three...
I just checked that Blue Peter section. It was directed by her.
Fantastic. So then the master meets up with the three thugs, and they see the sort of the red mark on the side of... one particular thug's neck.
Can I mention something about the red marks? Have you noticed on location they're small, but in the studio they're absolutely huge.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I had noticed a difference in the size, but I didn't tie in the studio and location aspect of it.
Right. One of them almost kicks over half this guy's face.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, what's happening is the fact that during, you know, when the extraction process first happens, it leaves this big welt, but as it, you know, the effect dissipates, it gets smaller and smaller.
Oh.
Thank you. This has been the science segment of the episode. We'll now move on with the story now that
thank you for that.
Satiated his
See, that's how it's done, Kirby. Right then, so the master cuts through the thing that's keeping the gate shut with a what looked a little bit like a laser device that's similar to the Doctor used in
Was that really necessary,
Attack
though?
Of Cybermen.
Couldn't you just unlatch just the gate?
Yes,
just blind over it.
And what's with the TCE doesn't leave little Barbie dolls around?
Yeah, I noticed that too. Unless he made them ultra small.
They say couldn't be bothered.
By this time, we already know what it does. So
yeah, well, thank you. I suppose if you hadn't watched Doctor Who before, you wouldn't have done, would you? Lee Anthony Davis says, "Hello, how are you?" I'm a bit stressed at the moment, frankly, Lee, but I can't vouch for everybody else. Right then. So yeah, then they sort of show the shot because Perry looks down the mine shaft just to show how deep it is. Because the next scene is the Doctor getting attacked because the Master has told these sort of thugs that the Doctor is to blame for and obviously the scientists and engineers are to blame for their potential ruin, I suppose. So the Doctor then ends up hanging off a chain and making some grimacing faces and
Master?
Then pardon?
It's Master. The Ronnie.
One of the reasons he's making some of these grimacing faces is he has dislocated one of his fingers in the chain.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. Wow. But anyway, he gets rescued.
His left pinky.
Okay, thank you.
It's in the making of documentary.
Yeah, right. Thank you. God. So,
Bryant also hurt her neck during this, and when she wasn't shooting, she had to wear a neck brace.
What on earth did she do to hurt her neck? She wasn't hanging off any chains or anything.
Probably the wig she was wearing.
Doesn't say anything in my guidebook, but I just wanted to one-up somebody.
I wish I'd
known. No, you're against the head of that kind of thing. That's Kirby.
See, that's how it's done, Kirby. Right then, so they get rescued by that chap with the sideburns and the hat, whose name escapes me, because he shoots the
Jack
gun.
Ward?
Pardon?
Is that no? I don't know. Is it Jack Ward? Is it? It
might have been friend of Stevenson's. And of course, then they go into the house, and the Doctor gets friendly with him, and this young lad turns up.
Have you seen what Lillian Robert just wrote?
I didn't see that episode.
Lillian Robert says, "Where's the Star Trek fight music?" I've got to rub my eye at the moment. Is it between me and Kirby or Kirby and Ian?
No,
it's
between Ian and Kirby.
Okay.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, the Rani is still... shut up. The Rani's still up to her old tricks, and then the Master turns up and befriends her. And interestingly, when the Rani takes off her costume, it's just a peeling off of a pathetic-looking sort of latex mask.
Master the Rani.
Oh, God.
He does not friend her. She does all. She insults him left, right, and center.
Yes.
It's great.
Yes, it is. I love that. It's like a brother and sister sort of relationship, isn't it?
This is a great story for the Ronnie's. Too bad the time of the Ronnie was so horrible.
We haven't got to the time of the Ronnie yet. Thank you very much. Of course, they're sniping each other. The Master threatens because he wants a bit of the action to start pulling out. Because the one thing the Ronnie is quite anal about is the tiny amount of brain material that she needs out of these people. And the Master just sort of just casually pull these hoses out of the machine, and then he shrinks one of her guards and then threatens to shrink another one, and then she gets a bit okay, I'll you know what, so the Doctor and Perry just hang around for a bit getting some information from the wives of some of the lads that have been affected by this thing.
Very loud baby.
Yes, very loud baby. and the Rani fills the master in on just not the microphone then, that was your fault, on what she's
I'm
up
sure
to.
It was.
Pardon?
I'm sure it was my fault.
It was your fault, yes. At least you admit
it's
it.
It's my fault.
Yeah. Alexa's fault.
No, it's not yet. Don't say that word. God's sake. My speaker is right next to it. God's sake. So moving forward a little bit. Oh, yeah. Then we meet the...
I have turned Alexa off.
You just said it again.
What, Alexa?
Right, anyway. So, yeah, then we meet boy band man who is there just... to sort of hint that she might be somebody that Perry might be interested in for the story, although she doesn't actually show any interest in it at all.
And he is good looking.
I suppose so. He does look a little bit like somebody, and I can't think who it was that he looked like. Was it Jason Donovan? Yeah, he looked a bit like Jason Donovan. Yeah, that's gone over the American's heads.
Too tall.
You didn't think he looked like Jason Donovan?
A bit too tall for Jason Donovan.
In the face, not in the height. And his hair as well, for
maybe
that
the
matter.
The hair, yeah. He looked a bit too clean, though.
You're talking about.
Never mind, Kirby. Just have to Google Jason Donovan.
He was far too
clean
for the episode, though, wasn't he?
It's interesting that, if you think about Jason Donovan, who made his fame from an Australian soap opera called Neighbours. Before becoming a bit of a soap star, and not a soap star, a pop star, and a star of theatre and screen. That other actors that were also in Neighbours at that time are certainly very, very well known in the United States of America.
Neighbours wasn't going at that time that story came out.
Was it not?
No. About a year before.
When this came out?
Wow. So maybe, so you can say, therefore, that Jason Donovan modelled his look on this young actor.
Who, incidentally, played Matthew Fairchild in Brass.
Did he? Never watched Brass.
Probably where you know him from, Brass.
So, meanwhile, the master and his new friend, the chief Luddite. What?
The Ronnie. I can do it to you, too.
The master, yeah, but we're actually talking about the master at this particular stage. Is making friends with his new the chief Luddite bloke. He's just told him basically to find the doctor and throw him. No, find the TARDIS.
It's Luke's father.
And throw. Was it Luke's father?
Darth
I never
Vader.
Knew that. I thought that was Darth Vader.
I am your father.
Mary. Anyway, right then. So he's basically telling the lads to throw the TARDIS down the tunnel while the doctor has pretended to be a Luddite and headed into the baths. And then there's a lovely scene when he realizes it's the Rani and has the. Another very amusing conversation with her. And
still tell that story about the
yeah,
the
I'm about to tell him about that one.
Yeah, on, but then. I got there first. Unfortunate for you, isn't it, Kirby?
Yes. I said, well, I was saying master to interrupt him to tell him that story.
Were you? Oh, so sorry. That, well, it happened so many times.
Nobody heard that, Kirby. Nobody heard that.
Go on then. Let's have the story then.
I didn't have this one. Go on.
Should I play the Jack and Ori music?
There you go.
When Colin is putting the dirt on his face, the makeup guy had brought in some nice makeup dirt and stuff, and then they went off on a lunch break or something, and during the break, a dog came along and did his business in that stuff.
I think I've heard that story. Yes. Certainly could smell it.
And then he put it on his face, and then he could smell it. And everyone that he was in the interview, he's talking about how they made him keep it on there for some close-ups and stuff. It's going, God.
Well, what have we got here? Robert Wrench Jr. says, hi, all. Just dropped in to say hi, going to get a late lunch. We'll listen to podcast later. See, that's what we're looking for. People don't want to listen to the show. Great. And then he says, I agree with Kirby. Kirby, time is not that great. Time is not. Yeah. Should there be a comma in there? Or is he actually saying that Kirby time isn't that great? Because I probably quite agree with that.
I kind of like that interpretation.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then he says, it's a trap,
it's
lol.
It's a trap.
Yeah. And then Terry Miles says, the kettles. What kettles?
Maybe we need a bit of tea on? What?
Yeah, I could do. Well, oh, we know I see for Kirby, yeah.
Cup of tea.
Oh, God, I invented that one. I forgot it. Terrible. Right, so Perry goes into the bathhouse to hopefully find the doctor. And then, then she's essentially gone and walked into a sort of trap, like saying she's.
Can I
now,
tell you something stupid about this?
Go on.
Have
then.
You noticed when she goes in the bathhouse, she puts the block for the door, slides it across, and yet the Rani and the Master come in.
Yeah.
How did they move that to one side?
I don't
There's
know.
There's a latch on the outside.
A latch on the outside, apparently,
Is
Robert.
Yeah.
No, that's what Kirby says.
Otherwise,
so if he
how
says
would
it,
you get in from the outside? It just makes sense.
He's looked it up on Wikipedia.
If somebody doesn't want you to come in, they will latch it from the inside, so they couldn't.
Well, there you go. Well, Lee Anthony Davis says, I do apologise, Adam, and your panel. You're a panel, guys. I have to go now.
Aww.
Bye, Lee. Right then. Moving on.
Being a plank.
Panel of wood. Yeah.
Being a
we
plank,
could all
right?
become trees by stepping on mines.
So they use Perry as a bargaining point with the Doctor, and then the TARDIS is wheeled on a cart, which is quite amusing. And, of course, the plan is to throw it down the deepest mine shaft.
Which doesn't make sense, because it's practically indestructible, except when it explodes. And
yeah, but it's going to be the access to it is going to be slightly more difficult if it's down a mine shaft, Kirby, is it not?
Yeah, and the people throwing it down there don't know it's indestructible.
No.
Yeah.
But the master who told them to do it knows.
Yes, exactly. But he also knows that it's going
to
be very difficult to get into it if it's down a deep mine shaft, for goodness sake.
Yeah, really. And then how does the doctor get to it?
Yes.
Exactly.
And he has to figure out where they put it.
But he's got a chance of getting to it now because they've strapped him to a box. They've strapped him to a box.
That guy who's the.
Fight. Star Trek.
The guy who. Not Stevenson, but the older guy. Manages to go and fetch it for the doctor.
He does, but don't worry about that. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
Put the music on.
God. Anyway, so the doctor, really meanwhile, is sort of crevessing. Is that the word? No, cascading. No, going down
to
the road.
Pick up a luge.
Oh, he's luging down the road. Amazingly, he doesn't go off the actual main path, not into the side. So he does actually keep rather well to the path itself.
Yeah,
and
there's someone inside underneath him.
Is it because Perry said push the thing and she pushed it the wrong way? I think that was quite amusing in itself. And then, fortunately for him, he thought a load of lads turn up to stop him. But then they push him towards the mine shaft. And that's the end of episode one, because
after
we think he's going to die.
They pick him up off of his luge and they put him on a mine cart.
Yeah.
That's it. They lift him off the stretcher, don't they? Yes, they did do that, Kirby. Yeah. I'll give
How
you that
How do they
one.
Know that that does that anyway?
I don't know. But I think it didn't really matter the fact that he was heading towards the mine shaft. He could have died just from it crashing into something on the way. But amazingly, like I said, it managed to keep to the track very, very well.
And he did his own stunt, which was good.
The one thing I don't get about this is that these guys are basically being reduced to, like, mindless thugs, right?
Yes.
Yet they're not mindless enough that they can't, like, oh, well, we'll push him down this hill, and then we'll transfer him to this thing, and then we'll push him down the... Why didn't they just kill him? Why didn't they just bring his neck? There was three or four of them. They could have just killed him on the spot. But no,
yes, they could.
They put a lot of thought into this plan, and, you know...
Maybe they just wanted... Some people like... villains and things in history like to have a bit of fun while seeing someone meet their demise. And masters are notorious at, oh, let's go round the long way to killing someone just so I can enjoy the fun of the person.
Just the level of participation in this plan is just mind-boggling.
Yeah,
it's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
That's what I said. Anyway, Robert Lynch Jr. said, Kate did a great acting job in this story, like the outfit she wears later on. There you go. So,
very 80s.
Yeah, so the doctor gets rescued by Stevenson. Stevenson himself. It's a shame that the character didn't appear in episode one, but Yeah. Only appeared by name.
He was there like a rocket.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, right. Of course, at this point, is it Josh, the Jason Donovan bloke? Is it called Josh?
No.
Luke.
No.
What's his name?
Luke.
That's it.
Young Luke.
Luke, yes. And he's got a sister called Leia. Luke. That's right. I remember now. Luke.
We were just talking about his father.
Ah, yes, indeed. Anyway, he's obviously... He's been affected. He's like a bit of an agent because there's a point in which he's
fed one of the maggots.
What? Yeah.
He's fed one of the maggots, the mind control maggots.
Oh, I see. Those maggots, yes. It's funny that the maggots are in that tray wriggling around, but the one who was eating looked like a bogey.
I know, yeah.
It was actually marzipan, by the way.
Was it? Oh, no, I like marzipan. Yeah,
I like marzipan.
Yep, they had they had actual live maggots, and then of course they had the marzipan. I hope they didn't mix them up, but like they did with the dog.
Anyway. Yeah.
Here's the fake ones.
So Perry gets grabbed by some scruffy old trampy bloke, but then gets rescued. She gets rescued by another bloke who points a pistol. I suppose it's a pistol, musket or whatever it is, at the other chap's head.
That would have made a mess of her dress.
It would have done, but I don't think she would have been too bothered if she'd been saved from a fate worse than death, which was death. What have we got up to? We got the Rani's TARDIS is looks like it's hidden behind some sort of what do you call it? What would they call that? It's a mural sort of cover thingy, isn't it?
Yeah, room divider thing.
Yes,
with a mural on it.
The Rani.
Yes.
Rani. You want me to call you the Rani?
Okay, no, I do not. Get on with it.
Only when he's wearing his leather pants.
It has been what?
only when he's wearing his leather pants, sweetie. Yeah.
It's been. I saw somewhere where there's a possibility that mural was painted by JNT.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's interesting. That was really worth waiting for. Thank you for that, Kirby. Lily Robin said, "Oh yes, the leather trousers." And Robert Vence Jr. said, "He ate the glowworm." And Riley's got a gadget that she points at these sort of zombied people, which makes them, I suppose, they died, and they just fall to the floor going, "Ah!" So I presume they're dead. And then, of course,
have you noticed the guy on the far end? He's lying on his side.
Yeah.
When he collapses this time. When you show him next, seeing as he's supposedly dead, he's lying on his back. So a bit of continuity error.
He's getting better.
Oh, good Lord. I hadn't noticed that. It does give the master the opportunity to do this. Mark
of the Rani.
The Mark of the Rani. Again, because he had already done it.
Twice.
Mark.
He says it once in each episode. I checked.
One per episode.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a point in which...
You have to know what the name of the episode is someplace, obviously.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Anyway, so there's a point in which the chap with the sideburns nearly doesn't quite do what Luke wants him to do, and Luke starts feeling for a crowbar that's behind him. Fortunately, he manages to manipulate him into...
Luke, better get those evaporators working on the South Ridge, or they'll be hell to pay.
Yes. The Doctor and Perry start snooping around the Rani's it's a bathhouse, isn't it, really? And the Doctor feels there might be a booby trap in there, so he attaches a piece of string to the.
What a stupid thing!
What to do? Hey. What he did?
No, to set it off, then. For Perry and the Doctor to just stand in the room while this supposedly deadly mustard gas. Why don't we get out the bathhouse? That would be a good idea.
Come back in a minute.
Yeah, that could be a good idea. But fortunately, he had a Are You My Mummy mask to put on. And then they find the Rani's rather cool
and
TARDIS.
Scramble around to find the Are You My Mummy mask.
Saying he had to stand there and name what the gas was.
Yeah.
He wasn't in a big hurry.
Oh, in two different ways. Just plain mustard gas and then a little about it.
Like the mask first, then talk about it.
Robert Vence Jr. said, "You notice the master says the mark of the Rani twice." Thank you, Robert. That's what I said. Then he corrected me in the bathhouse actually being the Rani's lair. Yes. Like I say, talk about Les. The Rani's TARDIS, which is exceptionally cool, is entered. It contains some really cool things. It's beautifully designed. And
except those glass containers, I'm sure they bug me that they don't have lids on.
Oh.
They bug me that the embryos don't have enough fluid inside.
Oh, for God's sake. How do you know? Have you ever put a blooming T-Rex embryo in a blooming cylinder before?
Have you?
No. How do you know they haven't got enough fluid in them?
Formaldehyde?
It's Time Lord fluid. It might be something that works better than the stuff they normally stick in them.
What has the master been doing in TARDIS?
Oh, good grief. Anyway, so the doctor's meanwhile, he's poking around. The doctor's in there. He's poking around and admiring the equipment. I did notice that the Rani's TARDIS console has actually got some Dalek features on it. That's quite interesting.
The
Dalek bumps.
Yeah.
The designer went for a metallic and dark kind of motif for it, and one of the steps down to make it like a chamber rather than just walking into a room.
The master and the Rani enter the TARDIS console room, and the Rani then takes off her sort of hag costume. She must have been really hot wearing those leather trousers and the hag costume. But there you go. And the doctor is in there, so he's in there with them. I'm just waiting for Miss Slider to work again so I can actually continue. And when they leave the TARDIS console room, the Rani's TARDIS console room, the doctor then goes underneath and nicks something from the console. And he looks really pleased with himself. What?
But the Rani. No, he doesn't nick something. He's making adjustments to make it go very fast, very far.
Okay.
He explains it later.
Yes, all right. I accept that explanation.
I'll explain later, at least once.
That's something of this era, isn't it? Lillian Robbins says, "I think I will cosplay the Rani's outfit." Thank you, Lillian. I will appreciate that. Yeah, which one? Yeah, the hag one or the leather trousers? I somehow think it's going to be the leather trousers one. Right, so let's move forward. Right, so the Rani has got a plan. She is laying some rather odd-looking mines in the Dell, the word Dell is something that's quite close to my heart because it's the name of Southampton's old football ground. It used to be called the Dell. But just thought I'd say that. And did you notice what's on these mines, everybody? Well, not you, Ian, because you haven't been obviously following the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast over the last couple of years. But
who are you people again?
It's the pieces of that set that keep.
It's the little square bits are on them. Yes, indeed. Yes, Ian, just to explain, we have been keeping an eye on bits of repeated use of bits of set that have been in the show for a long time.
And these were in what now?
Little square bits. Little square bits are on the actual mines. These have appeared in various guises in Doctor Who right the way back. Oh, how far now? Back to Pertwee, isn't it?
No, I think we first saw them with the second Tom Baker story.
Second Tom Baker. Well, that's pretty a long way back, isn't it? Yeah. So basically, they've been
Ark and Space.
They've appeared as various different bits of scenery. It's sometimes buttons, sometimes sort of just wallpaper, sometimes parts of costumes. On this particular instance, it's appeared as some buttons on some mines. I don't know if this may be the last time we see them, but we'll keep looking out for them.
I would be all surprised if there's pieces of them in the next story.
Okay.
Well, the interesting thing about this and the next story is that we're actually seeded a little bit of information in here with a prop.
Yes.
The Rani has what's called a Statenheim remote control, which, of course, comes in very handy in finding out that this piece of tech exists because it's used in the next story.
It is.
And I really kind of, I guess because of I never watched these in order at the time of broadcast because New Zealand, et cetera, we got most of our stuff through videotapes. And so I never really kind of thought about that until I was watching this. I was like, that's where that comes up first.
Indeed. Well, Lillian Robin says, "I've got faux leather pants." And then Robert Wrench Jr. says, love the part of the paper divider with the mustard gas and the doctor messes with the TARDIS. And then he says, I would know how many trees were people at one time. Oh, he wonders how many people were trees at any one particular time.
Yeah, with all the trees in this. Yeah.
Yes. I suppose the ones that grab you are used to be people, perhaps, I don't know.
And of course, Dorothy will come out of the woods to pick up some apples on the grounds.
Yes. And there's a point of obviously Perry's botanist skills are sort of outlined in this particular story. And so then for some reason, Luke and Perry go into the dell.
Can I say something with regards to Perry?
Yeah, she's very nice looking, isn't she? But I think we've already talked about this.
I think we've covered
this. Yeah, I know that. No, this is about the fact that something that I wouldn't have picked up on at the time, but the way she says herbs instead of herbs.
Right.
And I thought that was nice that she said it the American way.
Yeah, well, they've been very consistent about this.
Except her accent hasn't been particularly consistent.
I didn't notice it at the time when I first watched it, but, you know, I thought it was quite... because she, as being an English actress, would have just said herbs.
Well, she's probably directed to say it like that, to be fair.
She had she was living with a roommate that was American.
Ah.
And so she would go over the scripts with her roommate, would let her know how Americans say a lot of these things.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
What have we got here? Robert Wrench Jr. say, connects to the two doctors. You're right, Ian. There you go, Ian. You have to be right about something. Well done.
Right.
Yes.
Well, Sherry there's Miles no bell, says, so at least I've got something.
No, you don't get a bell because it's now been archived. The bell has gone. I'm sorry. Terry Miles says, the Dalek bumps are etheric beam locators, apparently.
Yeah. That's from Curse of Fatal Death.
And Lillian Robin says, why doesn't the mine go off when the Rani puts leaves on it after arming? Well, maybe it's got a timer arming, so she'll press a button and 5 seconds later it's armed.
It probably needs greater weight, like Robert says.
Yeah. But, could just be that it's a science fiction TV show.
That too.
Yeah. Science fiction fantasy TV show.
The Doctor, meanwhile... also is heading for the Dell and discovers the Rani and the Master at the edge, and he's a bit suspicious they might have been up to something, just as Luke treads on one of the mines and explodes into vegetable form.
Blue milk around there.
What?
No, it just blew Luke into a tree. Sorry, it was weak.
But there's a brilliant... Yeah. When the tree appears, the Doctor looks at both of them really angry, and the Master goes, it wasn't me! Essentially. That wasn't supposed to happen. It wasn't for him. Oh, that makes it all right then.
Yeah.
And I love that the Master looks quite, like, horrified and scared. The Rani looks really sort of arrogant in a way. Not at all bothered by the Doctor's... sort of. It also makes the Rani slightly more dangerous than the Master, to be fair. But anyway, so then we see Perry, who should have been with Luke, wandering through the woods.
Luke.
And then the tree branch grabs her. But she could easily have got away. Come on, let's face it.
Oh, yeah.
Trees just
feeling
her in danger.
It's what?
Yeah. Yes.
Grabbing one of her boobs, did you say?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Yeah. So anyway, so that leads to the Doctor threatening them. The Rani has to help her out.
That lovely line from the Doctor, though.
Which was?
The tree won't hurt you.
Oh, that was my quote.
Yeah.
You weren't around.
Yeah. You weren't around.
That's what happens when you get
hurt. I like that line.
You were spared
that. That's why I used this my quote.
God. Anyway, Laurie Nick says, Luke turns into one of the trees... in The Wizard of Oz. I thought someone might refer to his acting abilities in regards to the wooden side of things, but I think he got away with something.
Make the Wizard of Oz reference.
Oh, okay. So anyway, she rather begrudgingly, this is the Rani, helps Perry to avoid treading on the on the mines. Obviously, the Rani is quite impatient.
You could jump, can't you?
You could see the mines quite easily.
Okay. But you could see some of them, but how is he to be absolutely
sure? You
could
hear them because they're going... Especially you got like 10 of them in the Dell, it's like it's going to be deafening. It's like,
and then we have another funny scene where some Luddites turn up in their usual strange galloping way through the forest, and the Rani grabs their weapon to destroy them. But the doctor has already confiscated a phallic device
Luddites
from the master.
Miners, and they're stepping on mines.
Yes.
This should be the tagline for this podcast. Luddites galloping through the forest.
And then for some reason, the doctor leaves Perry to look after two of the most evil Time Lords ever to have existed with a phallic device.
No one thinks of knocking the TCE out of her hand when the doctor did that just a few minutes before.
Yeah. I love that we've got to the stage, Kirby, that you have now taken to using the abbreviation for the TCE. Device in question.
Tissue compression element.
Tissue.
Yes, I think you're not allowed to. Should you say what it is? Not a TCU, whatever, or TCE, or whatever you call it. It's not. When you say TCE, I think of that, that ointment or that disinfectant that stinks for ages after you've used it.
Master.
Oh, God.
The doctor refers to it as a TCE at one point.
Does he? Is that makes it right, does it?
Yes, it does.
Right, okay. So, anyway. The thugs turn up.
Official lingo.
The thugs turn up in the forest, and the doctor tries to. Oh my God, there's a lot of them. Anyway, he gets tied to a pole.
That was funny. He becomes C-3PO in the third movie.
And you know what's going to happen, don't you? It's quite funny as they sort of carry him through the Dell, and while they're doing that, Perry, who's been put in a really stupid situation by the doctor, is quite easily overcome by some I'm having an asthma attack issues with the Rani.
How dumb.
And she gets some gold glitter thrown in her face, and she basically has an allergic reaction to the glitter and collapses. The doctor,
he's
meanwhile,
Cyberman.
Obviously, the lads who are carrying the doctor, fortunately for him, both of them turn into trees at exactly the same time. But for some reason, one of the sort of trees has got a groove in it where the pole starts slipping down. So he's heading towards the mine. I thought that scene was really good, actually.
Well, apart from what I just realized, is that means the Rani laid three mines in a row with very little space between each of them. That just seems like poor planning.
Almost like social distancing mines, weren't there?
If you're this close, you're going
to
turn into a tree.
So anyway, the doctor, surprise, manages to wriggle out of the rather poorly put together mines, and then he uses the pole to almost like a device to sweep. So it's so as not to tread on any mines anymore. Then he finds an unconscious
minesweeper.
That's what I just said. Then he finds the unconscious Perry, who wakes up, and what happens next? So yeah, the master and the Rani are in a situation where the sort of walls of the mine are starting to collapse. They dive into the Rani's TARDIS.
Well, the master did that.
Did he? What did he do that for?
He used the TCE on one of the mine supports.
Have I not told you a few seconds ago to use the correct vernacular for the tissue compression eliminator? It's not difficult
tissue.
Did you sneeze then?
Tissue.
I hope you had your hand over your mouth. So they run into the TARDIS. What I liked about that scene is that as they were running into the TARDIS, somebody threw a bucket of coal dust into the doorway just to imply that they only just escaped the collapsing mine. I thought that was quite a good bit of work by the scenery people.
Who's going to clean that mess up?
Anyway, so the master's...
And also the other funny thing in that scene is that the Rani kicks the master in a rather sensitive place.
Yay. Oh, yeah.
Lillian Robin says, groovy. There you go. They just about escape as you would expect them to do. But unfortunately for the Rani, the doctor's done something to her TARDIS, and Yes, things start happening.
In the tailpipe, I think.
The embryos start growing, and the Master and the Rani get pinned to the walls of the TARDIS console room. Debbie Melrose says, "Sorry, we're just now heading home. Won't make it this evening as we're walking." So, but according to Kirby, only takes about 2 minutes to walk from wherever you are on the Isle of Wight, so she has got a very poor excuse there.
So what volume of excuses is that?
Yeah.
I don't remember Reese actually ever using that excuse, to be fair. We'd have to refer
every
to him.
Excuse
that
is
could
in
be
volume.
A new one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just generic walking home, wouldn't it be? We're walking home.
that's true. And then we
used that one before. We have to walk home.
So that's basically the end of the story, and the Doctor and Perry rather joyfully thank Stevenson and their friends for getting the TARDIS out of the what they call it? Mineshaft, that's it. Right. And does Perry give... Oh, yeah, she gives... sort of something on a stick to the chap with the sideburns. Sort of strawberry.
The herb from the devil.
The herbs.
Well, she the herbs. That's it.
Some of the herbs. Extract from the... The
Valyrian.
Has been extracting from those guys.
Okay. Then we get this scene.
This valve's the problem. You'll find the answer.
My sentiments exactly.
And when you do... Your invention will take off like a rocket. Oh, Stephen,
rocket.
Those puns get worse.
I thought they were improving.
I will venture just one question, Doctor. What precisely do you do in there?
This is my favourite line.
Argue, mainly.
Yes, that's why. That's why I use his mic.
I like that line too.
So that's the end of the Mark of the Rani. So, right, I have to say, I really thoroughly enjoyed that story, to be fair. I knew you lot would ruin it by picking out a minor little plot and continuity details. But it's I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was really engrossed in the location, and it did feel like it was in the time period it was meant to be in. Loved the fact that we had the Master and the Rani, and this is probably so far my favourite Master story, and the Rani's put downs of the Master were just gems the way through it. The Doctor was fantastic. There was lots of good little appropriate comedy, and Perry was actually made to appear reasonably intelligent in this story, there was a little bit of toning down of the bickering between the Doctor and Perry, which I haven't got a major problem with at this stage. I think it's actually gone down to acceptable levels for a couple of people who might have been living together in this box for a while. So, yeah, I really, really enjoy this one. It's so far my favourite Sixth Doctor story. What did you think of it, Kirby?
I thoroughly enjoy this one. I always have. It's fun. I like that the Rani is almost a better evil Time Lord than the Master. The Doctor is getting doctorish again after being so arrogant for all these however many stories in we are. You're right, bickering has become acceptable, although it doesn't really become truly acceptable until the first episode of the Trial of Time Lord. And by then it's too late because she's out of there soon. It's great. Really enjoy this one. By the way, there's a fun little extra. It's only about 3 minutes long on the DVD called Saturday Superstore.
Yeah.
Where it's apparently a call-in program, and they have Colin and Nicola there answering phones, and they managed to get a kid named Nicola Bryant to call and talk to Nicola Bryant. So that's the first fun part. And then they get Anthony Ainley to call in as the Master.
I think I might have seen that, but I don't remember it.
And this is actually, that was filmed before the story went out. So it's fun.
Is that it?
Anyway, I like this one.
You like that one, do you? That's good, then. Robert, I dread to think what you think.
Why? No, I quite liked it.
Oh.
I found the second episode better than the first, though, for some reason.
Right.
I didn't like Perry's outfit. I thought it was gross.
It covered up too much of her body, didn't it, though, Robert?
Wearing high heels with that and having to run. Yeah, that's a really smart idea, isn't it?
Wearing shiny pink under the skirt, yes.
Yeah, I noticed that. What else can I say? Oh, just how did the Master get free from his apparent death in Planet of Fire as well?
They never really explain how he gets away, but he just does.
Has a knack of escaping these things and just suddenly appearing.
But he did say, everybody knows I'm indestructible. The rest of that effect.
And another funny line, which is this continuity guide, said, the Rani on the Master, he'd get dizzy if he tried to walk in a straight line. What was other things?
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Gibby.
I've stated before, I have a theory why the Master always gets out of these things. It's because when we saw that Timeless Child business, that's not the Doctor, that's the Master, or it's both of them.
Yeah.
I somehow doubt that, but okay, thank you, Kirby. Before we get back to you, Robert, Lillian Robbins says groove in the tree when she was talking about groovy.
Yeah.
She was talking about the groove in the tree. And Laurie Nick says, capital idea, I will be implementing social distancing mines in my town right away. That's copyright 20megabyte.com podcast. Yeah, sorry, Robert, carry on.
And yeah, I just really love the Rani and the Master and them together, and their back and forth, their banter was so funny. And the Rani just seemed to be the more dangerous of the two.
Yes.
But I just sort of wonder what the Master is really doing. It seemed to be the Rani was doing all the work, and the Master was just trying to manipulate things to his end.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about the Rani, but it does rather beg the question as to why they've never brought the Rani back. Apart from, obviously, time off.
Dimensions in time, come on.
Oh, yeah, apart from that.
Time of the Rani.
But I'm talking about brought her back with a different actress playing a regenerated Rani.
They have in Big Finish.
Is there Big Finish?
Oh, have they? They've done in Big Finish.
There is.
Oh, cool.
Big Finish Rani, yeah.
Planet of the Rani is one of them.
And, of course, she was in Sarah Jane Adventures, wasn't she?
The other Rani.
Yeah.
That was a regenerated Rani. But, yeah, I thought the setting was great. Really looked authentic.
Yes.
Which was very good. But I did think there was some really bad blackface going on in some of the story as well.
They're coal miners.
God's sake, Robert.
it was enjoyable. I enjoyed the second episode a bit more. I don't know why, but yeah.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Rog. Ian, what did you think? Oh, God, hang on. You're not allowed to answer that because I've just been surprise, interrupted by Kirby. Yes.
Speaking of the Sarah Jane Adventures and Ronnie.
Yeah.
Remember, there was the one short that they did from Raxacorica Falapatorius with Love,
yeah,
where they bring in Ronnie Barker, so they've got the two Ronnies.
Anyway, Ian, what did you think of it?
I really liked it, and it's one of those things that, you know, going back through these things now, being a much older individual. Yeah, you get a better appreciation of things, and you start looking at the things like the lovely shots, the establishing shots.
Yes,
back
indeed.
When I'm 14, 15, I'm like, get to the story. And then I'm like, wow, here's somebody doing crane shots in Doctor Who.
Yep.
In the 80s. It's like, awesome. And I actually saw that. So I'm like, man, that's amazing. So there's just like, there's lots of little things to love, and I kind of get the reason for the dress. I like the fact that she's at least in a period dress, and I get they were supposed to be going to Kew Gardens, but I don't understand why they would then leave her in that outfit. It would be good for a good open, nice cold open. It's like, oh, this isn't Kew Gardens. Well, go back in and get out of that ridiculous outfit. That would have been funny.
Yeah, Yeah.
And then she would have been in something a little more sturdy, but...
I agree.
Yeah. But I think it was also too, probably to match the doctor's outfit so they would look a pair rather than, you know, just him standing up. But I don't know. I'm not a TV maker. But yeah, no, it's great. I do wish kind of that they hadn't Lumber the Master in there at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the fact that we do get to see how another Gallifreyan views the Doctor and the Master's little tiff.
Yeah.
And she views it just like that. And so it's great to have that, but I just would have liked to have met her and learned about her just through the Doctor and then had another story. I don't know where the... I think it was something to do with they had an option for Ainley. I think he had an option and they could either use it or...
That could be right, yeah.
And so they used it. But because Kate O'Mara could handle all that by herself, not a problem.
Oh, definitely.
But I mean, you know, looking back at it, it's great. I mean, I do wish, I guess, in the special edition, if they go back and just replace the tree, because the effect of the tree coming up was actually quite good.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
Then when you cut to the fake tree, it's like, oh, but the effect for that time period, I'm like, it's
rubber.
It was a really good controlled kind of upwards
rush,
and it really looked like something just erupted from the ground.
Yeah.
But then you've got a rubber tree. So if they could digitally do that, I know they can't do that.
Yeah, it wasn't quite Groot, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't Groot at all. Wasn't great either.
Oh, see, that's how you do it, Kirby.
By the way, the new Rani is Siobhan Redmond.
She's the one in Big Finish.
So I have not heard her, but
good job too.
She's good. She's really good.
Yeah.
Well, Laurie Nick says, "Dope." Lillian Robin said that Sarah Jane story had Ronnie Corbett, not Ronnie Barker. But I know what Kirby was trying to say. No, just correct him, Lillian. That's great. Derry Miles says, "How did her dress stay white in the village with coal mine? In the village with a coal mine and a foundry, even the hem stayed clean." That's a good point.
Oh, I'll finish up with two little things. Speaking of clean, I know it's a science fiction, fantasy, reality
TV show,
unreality
reality?
Family show,
reality?
family show. But how the hell does Perry's dress stay that sparkling clean throughout the entire episode? If you see how much mud is on the ground,
that's just what Terry just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That bothers me too.
No,
I think he copyrighted that statement as well, so you don't get away with that one.
I don't think so. I don't remember hearing that. And that means I've forgotten my last point. Oh, bugger. I'll think of it.
Go on
later.
It's funny watching a lot of that outdoor filming where it's raining and then it's not raining and then they're pushing the TARDIS on the cart through the rain.
And it's not raining. Oh. Well, that's just the way it goes, isn't it, in Great Britain, unfortunately. One minute it's raining, next minute it's not.
I think one of the working titles was that, this is my last point, but one of the working titles was much better, and it was Enter the Rani.
Oh, that sounds a bit rude, actually. That's what she said.
I know. Some of your comments throughout this,
that's
if you string
what the
together,
master was doing with like, that tissue compression eliminator.
Thank you for saying it correctly there, Robert. Neil James says, "I miss the leotards." So do I, Neil.
The leotards are ugly with those ugly shorts.
Yeah, but you get to see more of Nicola Bryant.
I know.
True.
They were popular at the time.
That means you're buying into what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's fantastic, isn't it? But we still have one more thing to wait for. Yes, Mary, what did you think of it?
Well, I'm going to disappoint you all because I really enjoyed this one.
Hang on. You know what's appropriate? But it's going to be one of these.
But I want to go back to Perry's dress. It was more outrageous than the Doctor's coat.
I will say the music's still playing.
Oh, I can't hear it.
Sorry, what?
What?
You're getting much bigger fanfare than you imagined.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're getting fireworks too.
Sorry, Mary. That was appropriate for the full length celebratory hallelujah chorus. Carry on.
Except when Perry doesn't like many stories.
I'm going to get back to Perry's dress, which, you know, as I said earlier, was more outrageous than the doctor's coat. So I don't know where she comes off with her comments about him. The thing is that you're all excusing her dress by saying, oh, you know, but it's right for the period. No, it's not. They got pulled. The TARDIS got pulled into that time period. She thought she was going to Kew Gardens. I mean, they didn't delineate when they were arriving at Kew Gardens, but there was, but they got pulled where they were. So, you know, the fact that the dress may stylistically, remotely, you know, kind of fits the period was just happenstance. It wasn't anything that she planned. So I don't know.
It's a costume,
you know,
designer.
So. If they'd shown up, let's say, in 1985 going to Kew Gardens, you know, she would have really looked ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the thing that I liked about this is it was really well directed. And so I was very pleased to see that it was a woman that directed it. I did read that she had been bothering JNT for some time to direct a Doctor Who episode. And so he gave her this one to do, and I think she did a great job. It was always moving. There were never any times when people were just standing around, you know, stating a lot of dialogue. It felt dynamic. You know, there was always something exciting going on. That's what I really liked about it. And, of course, the film work. I love film work because I think it's richer looking than videotape. Something else that has changed is, you know, from being boring and static and all that, is the vocabulary being given to these characters to use. And I must say it's must be Pip and Jane Baker that are up to this. I mean, we've got ordinary people. We're not talking, you know, the educated or the upper class or the master or anybody saying things like unorthodox entry or fortuitous would be a more apposite epithet. Mm. It's like, what? What are we talking about here? So I think everybody talks like that in this episode.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, we're delineating, you know, the lower dirty class from the educated. They're all
down
talking.
To like that.
Yeah. And one thing that more I did enjoy, of course, was more. The Master and the Rani combo. I think they made a great comedy combo. The Master always looked like he was the stupid sidekick to the Rani. She always looked in charge. You're right. She was always doing all the work. And he was just kind of, you know, hanging in there thinking he was in control when he never, never, ever was. They were like the comedy in this, and I enjoyed that. And I wish that we could have had those two, you know, back again. Okay, but anyway, yeah, I enjoyed many aspects of this except for Perry's outfit.
Hmm.
Was that it?
That's it.
Well, thank you very much, Mary. I've managed to load up by clicking on the video link the rest of the comments we may and may not have missed. So I'm just going to look through some of them. Lillian Robin said, late again. That's a bit harsh. What else did we have? Ian Kirk said, why didn't the TARDIS translate those accents? Lillian Robin said, you don't have to wear the mask now. You know what I meant. Yes, I was being facetious, Lillian. It's my job. That's what I get paid for, isn't it, Kirby?
You're the only one who gets paid for this.
Hmm. The only one that pays out for it, you mean? Then she says, I'm muffled. She says, you're muffled, i.e. me. Then she said, thanks, because I took it off. And then Terry said that I was muffled. And anything else we got here? Blah blah blah. But I was just talking amongst yourselves while I'm reading through this stuff. I think that might be the only ones I missed out on.
Yeah, I think they are.
Oh, Terry Mars says the kettles. Oh, is that what they were bathing in?
No, those are bathtubs. They were wooden bathtubs.
No, he's talking about it's time for a cup of tea.
Oh yes, we talked about that one, didn't we? That was covered. Yeah. Right then, so Lillian Robin, this is more up to date now. Lillian Robin says they used Perry's costume in 2009 in Emma. There you go. You didn't know that one, Kirby, did you?
I didn't know that either.
Really, the exact same one?
Apparently
wow.
So. But you know, we talk about this costume that she had on. Like you say, so many times in Doctor Who that they said. the doctor says, I'm going to take you so-and-so. So they go into the wardrobe and get some items that they think is suitable for the era. The doctor obviously has no dress sense at all, so the doctor would never be in a position to say, nope, that wouldn't work. So he or she would then let the companion wear an inappropriate costume. Fortunately, it looks like the 13th Doctor's a bit more clued up on that sort of thing, because I did notice that her companion seemed to be wearing more appropriate clothes for the time periods, but the 6th Doctor clearly had a bit of an issue with appropriate costumes.
Speaking of the 6th Doctor and his costume, during this episode, apparently, I have to go back and rewatch it again because I just became aware of this, Colin Baker had cats sewn into the inside of the coat. One
cats.
For each episode.
Yeah.
Little patchwork cats on the inside of the coat. Yeah. One per episode.
A tech?
I don't know if that got kept up.
Patch. I'm not understanding. What do you mean a tech?
You know the little badge thing that he's got, the patch of the cat?
There'd be a patchwork, a little patchwork, a little piece of fabric shaped like a cat.
Okay, okay.
All right.
Why did he do that?
Because he loves cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to own one now.
Well, no, because he wouldn't be able to look after it, because he's always at conventions, isn't he, most of the time?
Not right now. We're all
I know, not right now, but you wouldn't think, all right, I'm in lockdown, I'll get a cat, because I'm never going to a convention again, is he, for goodness sake? Right then, Robert Venge Jr. says, one of the best Sixth Doctor stories, better than Time Lash. We'll find that out in a few weeks' time, won't we?
Oh, shush now. Hold your tongue.
So I think we can move on to feedback now. Kirby, did you post a request? I don't think I know the answer to this one.
Hang on.
Guess gotta reboot. Hang on.
I don't have the Facebook up. Here's
Kirby.
Facebook.
Are you going to read the thing about discussion about Perry's outfit as well?
I guess so. Because this whole thing started a couple of days ago with Lillian posted, "Ugh, I usually like Perry's outfits, but a big no to this one."
I think that was the old point, but yes.
Chris Miller commented there, "I'm just glad the circus tent canvas didn't go to waste." Robert Wins Jr. says, "Wouldn't choose anyone." Debbie Melrose, whoever that is, absolutely awful choice. In black and white, it looked good. Lori Nick said, "Yes, she was not fed, and they put her in something that makes her look like a sallow sack of potatoes."
Yeah,
and she also says, "They were aiming towards something like this late Regency, early Victorian, but she is definitely lacking the correct undergarments to not make it look frumpy on her." Robert Wins Jr., "I notice your dress even from this pile of crap."
Because it's a picture. Yeah.
So I nicked that same picture that she used for the feedback request.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you did, yes.
And
I apologize.
I even said I hope she doesn't mind my nicking picture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she got it somewhere on the internet anyway. Jefferson Ling says Luke gets turned into a tree. Ian says you are right.
See, Kirby, that's how it's done.
Robert Wins says ochre cedar. They says, "So tell me, am I wearing the right shoes for this walk in the woods?" He also says, "Remember Stones of Blood? She had shoe problems too."
Yeah, that's true.
Ian Kirk says, "I have just twigged that this was a pun. I am pining for Perry and am rooting for her. They should leave her in the blue shorts outfit." Robert Wins says, "The Ronnie looked gorgeous as well. I should be pining for her." He also, okay, he finally gives a review. Oh, good grief. he says, "My review of Mark of the Rani. Before I start, there's a Star Trek Discovery connection. More later, as the doctor would say. So the Doctor and Perry land on Earth during the Industrial Revolution. We don't get one, but three Time Lords. It was funny to see the Master dressed as a scarecrow. The Rani dressed as an old woman running a bathhouse. At least Perry gets to use her training in this story. The Master, of course, being over the top, taking Ronnie's worms and the chemicals she was taking out of people's necks. The Ronnie didn't want to have nothing to do with the Doctor, I'm just quoting this, sorry. Or help the master. She gets pulled in. The master, besides getting even with the Doctor and Perry for what happened on Planet of Fire, besides wanting to rule the Earth as a base, he gets that later on with the master race as the Sims master. Location shooting was excellent. Lots of funny lines. And the Ronnie's TARDIS looked fantastic. Fantastic. Again, a very violent episode, but no blood, just dying and people turning into trees. As the Ronnie said, they live four times longer. Yeah, that was one of my alternate quotes, by the way. Love Kate O'Mara as the Ronnie. This was written by Pip and Jane Baker, who fans weren't too crazy about as writers, but they did okay on this one.
Yes, they did.
Is this their first one?
I don't mind them.
This is their first one.
Yeah,
it is. Okay, well, that's why. Music was better with this episode. Rewatch value is okay. I can watch it again once in a while. Now, the connection with Star Trek Discovery. In Discovery Season 2, Episode 2, New Eden, one of the crew on the landing party, Lieutenant Owosekun, grew up in a Luddite community. Nice to know the Mennonite and Amish is still around in the 23rd century. This is one of my favorite of the Six Doctor stories, next to the Two Doctors. My fanboy rating is a 4 out of 5. By the way, I've got a comment about the music. Someone else was commissioned to do the music for this one, but unfortunately he got sick and died.
Oh, funny.
Before he could finish it. And on the DVD, they have his music for the first episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So there's a picture of the Star Trek Discovery character.
All right, okay.
No, that's not her. That's Michael Burnham, not...
No, it's Michael Burnham who is the main character.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I've never seen the show.
Well, you should do it. Brilliant.
Kirby!
Oh, and the nice thing about that is the BBC actually did pay the family for everything he composed, even though they didn't utilize it in the show.
Well, that's nice.
Well, they did, but they did put
Well, they did later on, but they didn't pay him out thinking, oh, you know, we'll shove this in a DVD in 40 years.
Right. Billy Kirkbright says, I'd not seen the story fully before, so I figured I'd spend time watching it this weekend to give some deep and thoughtful feedback.
Yes.
The first half was looking like a good story, somewhat redemptive of last week's pitiful story. Bearing in mind, I was watching this via a medium I don't want to mention, and it being so glitchy, the second half I gave up due to a bad stream. Mm. Alas, I still haven't seen this story fully. I hope you all enjoyed it.
Sadly, what Billy said that makes me sound like I should advise him to have a prostate examination when he said about a bad stream.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, I hope you get a chance to rewatch it, Billy. I really enjoyed watching it again. I like the Ronnie in this more than time in the Ronnie's McCoy regeneration story.
I think most people would say that, yes.
Yeah. Laurie Nix posted a... clip of the master getting kneed in the
testicles,
saying this is why this is the best episode of the season ever.
Do you remember when he got kneed in the you know? I don't know if any of you have seen a brilliant comedy series called Fawlty Towers. There's a point in which the major just says a little bit too much and he gets his grabbed by Fawlty just to shut him up. This reminded me of that a little bit.
That's such a good show.
Yes. Carry on.
You know, the Germans episode was banned by one of the streaming services because of what the Major said.
Yeah, I know. That is, I mean, I've always felt a bit uneasy by what the Major says.
Yeah. But
sadly, my granddad, who was of the same age, would also say stuff like that. And I started out getting deeply offended and deeply upset. But I thought, well, it's not going to stop him from saying it. So I just sort of almost put my fingers in his ears when he'd go down that road. And that's how I approach the lines that the Major deliver. He's from a different era, but it's really difficult to listen to.
It is, yes.
I don't think they should take it out, though, because people need to be offended by things sometimes.
And The Germans is a brilliant episode.
It is brilliant.
Yes.
And it's not written in a way to make The Germans look bad. It's a bit like
it's always heaping fun on how bad bloody fault he is.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that series with Alf Garnett in it. I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly.
Alf Garnett was always made to look bad, yet he had to deliver the racist lines so as he could be made to look like an idiot, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, back to the comments. Sorry to send us off. Doctor Who.
Yes.
Laurie Nick says, for me, next to Missy, Ronnie is a true Time Lady goals. I mean, check out those perfectly circular hickeys. And then she posts a link to a song that I haven't listened to. She says, I was singing this tune whilst watching.
Men will not be blamed for nothing,
Mr. Stevenson.
Mm.
So I don't know what that has to do.
I've never heard of that before.
I'll have to watch it later.
Yes.
She also says, lastly, beyond that horrible outfit they put Perry in, Lillian covered that already. This lives up to my preference for a historical Who episode with a dollop of scene-chewing Time Lords making mischief.
Yeah,
I will skip Kirk's script.
Yes.
He also says, why didn't the TARDIS translate those accents?
He did.
Good question. It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
But did you Americans have any problem with the Geordie accents in the
A little bit, yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, I had subtitles on, so...
Oh, okay.
I almost heard the subtitles.
So did I.
I had trouble at the very beginning, and then it just became easier to understand them.
Oh, okay.
Neil James says...
British TV.
Yeah.
Neil James says, The Mark of the Ronnie, wonderfully directed with a fantastic location and beautiful music. The story's okay, but it does run out of steam.
See, that's how it's done, Kirby.
The master posing the scarecrow for no apparent reason is hilarious.
That is true. What was he just doing standing there?
I believe there was more to the scarecrow, but a lot of it got cut.
And then he murders a dog. Good job. He never met K-9. Ronnie is a fun villainess, and I admire her dedication to her cause by posing as a hunchback old woman. Mm. The constant squabbling between the three Gallifreyans is good fun, and the Ronnie's TARDIS is pretty cool.
It is.
Exactly.
Colin Baker was brave to do the stunt on the runaway cart himself. Nicola did well not to fall over a lot in that trip. Then it all goes a bit daft as Perry gets molested by a horny tree and Ronnie and Master are terrorized by a silly dinosaur. It looked okay.
It looked okay, actually.
Yeah.
Not much to say about the Sixth Doctor other than I still don't like him at all.
Oh.
Very run-of-the-mill story elevated by a stunning
run-of-the-mill story.
So many of us are spoiled because of Big Finish, you know, that we've come to love him, you know, so it's hard to look at these stories and remember how repellent he was.
I still love him. I love him from the TV stories myself.
I fell in love with him through this.
Yes, me too.
Kelly, but I haven't done a lot of Big Finish, but I like him from this.
I'm going to say it ahead of time, but I like the two Doctors except for the death of the one character.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yes.
Next week.
So
is that it, Kirby?
That's it, except for Ian's script.
Okay. Right then, I've got some emails through the 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Starting with Terry Miles, who says, Hi, everybody. The Mark of the Ronnie, as the Master says twice in the story, is a good historical story introducing a new Time Lord. It was a shame the Master was in it to ruin the Rani's plans with his insane twisted hate of the Doctor. In the words of the Rani, he'd get dizzy if he tried to walk in a straight line. It's a good line. Perry's pantomime dame outfit went well with the Doctor's clown suit. I had to stop the DVD when the Rani hobbles out to ask the lad kicking the potato down the road to tell the miners that the bathhouse was open. I'm sure the lad was the same actor that was in the Awakening story, the one from the past that was dragged by the malice to the 20th century.
I like that guy.
Indeed. Odd that no one noticed 8 or 9 of the miners had gone for a bath, had turned into Luddites, For a small village with a mine in the, and a foundry, I think at least the local landowner would have done something about it. This was a beautiful advert for the Iron Bridge Museum. It was a bit slow, and once again, four parts made into a two-parter. Look out for the two cliffhangers in the middle of each episode. All in all, an average story. With luck, Doctor Two will make the next one more interesting. Thank you, Terry Miles. Thank you, Terry.
Can I just say something?
No. I'll go on then.
Because he talks about the cliffhangers in the middle of the episode.
Yes.
In Australia, they probably as in New Zealand, they would have shown them as the four episodes and not the two.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I've got a recording of Revelation of the Daleks, and it's got some really weird cliffhangers. They just, the ABC have just cut up and just plonked in there. It's like
what is worse
the doctor
is,
talking. But,
yeah. What's worse is I think New Zealand got the Australian episodes after Australia had done their edits. And then we had to fit them in. So we, by the time they got to us, something less. So it's like going back and watching stuff on DVD now. It's like, huh. Did I see this?
Yeah. It's like the giant rat in Talents of Wang Chiang was virtually missing from Australian TV. We only got to see things on when the VHS arrived.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Yeah, people think they're cool torrenting stuff and things like that. It's like, back in the day, we had people sending us tapes from the UK.
Oh, yeah. We've referred to that on many occasions about the sort of... Well, it was almost like a black market for VHS tapes of Snowy Doctor Who.
Well, see, the thing is that in the UK, you hardly got any repeats, but people managed to get hold of black and white episodes.
They were originally in colour, but they degraded so much through being copied over and over again that they ended up being black and white.
No, I'm talking about the 60s episodes.
Okay.
Because I got sent the Daleks by somebody, and I sent him some Pertwee stories.
Yes. Anyway, I must turn my light on. I've got this sonic screwdriver. It should do the job.
Alexa!
Alexa, turn the light on.
You don't have to. I've just used my sonic screwdriver. Look. Shut up!
Which one did you want?
Shut up.
It's on again.
Yeah, while you're doing that, let me bring up for those who want more.
Alexa, which one? Shut up.
Those who do want some more Ronnie, as Ian mentioned, there is a wonderful story called The Planet of the Ronnie, starring Siobhan Redman. That's a big finish, and it's excellent. And then for those who, like me, who found Perry incredibly irritating all the time, there is a big finish story. It's a companion chronicle called Perry and the Piss Gun Paradox.
She has a what? Piss on, she has a piss
I
on what?
Attest to that. Piss gun paradox.
She has a piss on a paradox. That's very inappropriate.
Piss gun paradox.
That's what I just said. She had a piss on a pair of docks. Which doctors was it? Was that the other two doctors we're going to see in the next story?
It's written
back
in the 80s.
There are two
broken paradox back then.
Come on, stop talking over my jokes.
Paradox.
There are two doctors in it. The fifth and the sixth doctor are in it.
It is very good. So very
and
good.
You go into her past, you meet her mother, and you go into the future, you meet a Perry of the future. So it's a really, really good. It's written by her companion,
Ned Fountain.
Can I ask, has Kate O'Mara played the Mara in Big Finish? Mart played the Rani in Big Finish.
BBV, Bill Blagg's video ones.
Yeah, okay.
Rani reaps the whirlwind comes to mind.
Okay. Mm. But I thought my joke I just did then when you talked over was actually brilliant. No, it's just as well there's nothing for me to have a reason to predict. No, I'm not saying it again.
Because I didn't hear it.
Well, you have to listen to the podcast. Fortunately, my microphone is I can actually turn you lot down and everybody would hear the wonderful joke.
We're watching a paradox next week.
This is why I like doing TikToks, because nobody interrupts me when I'm doing my jokes on TikTok. Right then.
All of those jokes are pretty lame.
No, they're not. They're pretty superb. Thank you, Kirby. You're going to get yourself in trouble in a minute. Right then. We've got this coming up.
I wonder why he picks on you.
Hello, 20 Magmat Podcast, this is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Captain.
I've now thought of a joke a few weeks too late.
Oh.
In The Awakening, they want to make Perry Queen of the May, and take her by horse-drawn cart to be burned.
I don't want to go over the cart.
Oh.
Mark of the Rani by Pip and Jane Baker. Pip and Jane, as authors, are usually a bad sign. In the same way an ambulance is a sign of something bad. They're a symptom, not the cause. They produce workable scripts and write fast, because there's two of them. Pip and Jane are the fourth emergency service. The Rani in disguise, rather than the master. Perry gets to hold the tissue compression eliminator.
She does.
Tissue.
We go underground again. Mustard gas is a brown or transparent liquid, used as a mist of fine droplets. The doctor and Perry should have removed their contaminated clothes as soon as possible.
Good point.
When is this Mark character going to show up? Alexa, what was the Southampton score?
For today's one.
English Premier League. Southampton beat Bournemouth 2-0 at Vitality Stadium in Bournemouth,
yes.
England.
Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian, for pointing that excellent bit of sports information out. I may have should have pointed out myself. Mary, before we move on to a lovely bit of text you've just been sent, well, there's some more stuff coming through on the live feed. Lillian Robbins says the exact same one, recycledmoviecostumes.com. Oh, yeah, she's actually posted the link to the actual costume. Mm-hmm. And then Terry Marr says, the cat show when he takes his coat off. Oh, yes, right. The cats that you were talking about, Ian. So when he takes his coat off, you can see the cats. Robert Vence Jr. says, Kirby, turn in your Greek card.
What?
All right, stop.
I think he means geek, and why?
Oh, right. Yeah, it probably does. Yeah, turn in your geek card. I don't know, probably because you got something wrong. And then he says, love that series. Adam, he's talking about he loves Fawlty Towers. We're slightly behind here.
The two Ronnies thing.
Apparently, Matthew Kressel has joined. Yes. Yes, you can't get away with it, Matthew, pretending you're not available by watching the live feed. It's got to be said. Robert Vence Jr. says, I like Colin in Big Finish also. We all love Colin. We love Colin full stop, let alone in Big Finish. Laurie Nick says, ha, ha, ha. I should hope so too, Laurie. And Lillian Robbins says, Kirby posted the picture of the reuse of Perry's costume in the comment post. Thanks, with the big heart next to it, Kirby.
Oh!
Ooh. Ooh. Right then, Mary, you have some text to impass to us. I think that's the
right
phrase.
Yes, I do.
Look at that picture, by the
way. I should have a theme tune for Alan T. Butcher, but I haven't.
Okay. Okay, he starts off with, maybe she's Romana, but gone off the rails. Or enter the Rani, that's what she said. Dear 20 Megabiters, Mark of the Rani is, of course, a closely studied presentation of a number of aspects of the Industrial Revolution and an introduction to some that the names that played a major role in its common exegesis. There is obviously considerable emphasis on the Luddite tendency, which sought to resist mechanization. We must understand that by showing this as being intensified by the Rani's chemical extractions leading to inability to sleep, the authors are clearly hinting at the harsh conditions and long hours which came in for the proletariat under industrialization. Lord Ravensworth was indeed a Tory with the capital to become a major beneficiary of the impending massive social changes, and is clearly seen here to have very little idea about anything. The intellectual drivers of the changes are the engineers who we see are operating under the auspices of capital and are due to be meeting to that end during this story. That meeting is disrupted by the trouble, but to no lasting effect. The exploitation of labor would, of course, intensify and certainly would not be helped by mechanization over the following century, and more given the rapacious appetites of capitalist and imperialist forces. Not until the rise of syndicalism and other functions of trades, unionism, would the plight of working people start to be addressed. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that Pip and Jane Baker's loquacious lexical libations are not welcome, they are simply out of their minds. It seems to me they make a fine contribution. Rani is, of course, a word which in many Indonesian's Aryan languages means lady, and is as such an apposite epithet for a female time lord who is far from being a dilettante. Now, I read that Rani is the female form of Raja, which is like queen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we also learned that almost certainly the Universe of Minder, a TV show also created by Verity Lambert, is at one with the Hooniverse as one of Arthur Daly's nemesis Detective Sergeant Ronnie Rycott bears a striking resemblance to Jack Ward, one of the bearers of the mark of the Ronnie, and is obviously a descendant.
Oh, yeah.
All in all, Mark of the Ronnie is another great story in the finest tradition of the program, elucidating an important historic era and delivering a very new spin on the potential Time Lord mentality. The Ronnie is a strictly amoral character with a practical goal and neither moral constraints nor delight in cruelty or domination. You notice that about her. You know, she didn't really like the master. You know, she wasn't glorifying over any... putting anybody down. She just wanted what she wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Therefore, her exasperated reaction to the master and the doctor is a welcome new aspect here.
Yeah.
Once again, Colin Baker provides an accomplished and entertaining performance and an impressive breadth to his characterization of the doctor. Perry proves resourceful as well as realistic in her attitude to the dangers she encounters, whilst the duo of villains form quite the odd couple. The remainder of the cast are not outstanding, except perhaps in that several of them spend a lot of time outstanding and doing nothing. This story is perhaps one episode too short, as who would not want to see a lot more in their peripheral vision of Perry employing her evident skills, even in that house. Next up, Doctor Who and the Doctor 2-2, or never mind Blinovich, or the First Law of Time, Troughton said yes. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Oh, well
did he
done,
have a
Mary.
Script written by Pip and Jane Baker?
What, Alan T. Butcher?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, really.
Just thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that moves
they are dead now, though.
Yes, they are. Yes. On that note, we'll move back to the live feed.
At Andrew Cartmell either.
Pardon?
They're not favourites of Andrew Cartmell.
No. But Andrew Cartmell is a favourite of ours. Just so I was
yes.
We must get him back on the show. Mind you, let's wait to the Sylvester McCoy era. Right, what have we got here? We've got Lillian Robbins said... Oh, I've done that one. Robin Vince Jr. said, not watching Discovery. And then he says, Kirby, says Robert
yes,
Haynes.
Yes, I wrote tut-tut.
I said that.
I could say tut-tut.
No, I know you said it was you that said tut-tut.
No, I could say that to Kirby right now. Tut-tut, Kirby.
Oh, okay. Tut-tut, Kirby. Don't think it'll make a difference for now.
Tut-tut, it looks like rain.
Oh, God. Right, Doctor Who news.
Taken from Winnie the Pooh, by the way.
Fantastic. Davison versus Daleks. Big finish have announced that the Fifth Doctor, Peter Davison, will battle the Daleks in Shadow of the Daleks, a new set of audio adventures for Big Finish. Due in late 2020 as part of Big Finish's monthly adventures range, these eight Doctor Who stories split across two releases, star Davison chasing the Daleks through time and space on a journey of ultimate terror. So that's two graphics here of Shadow of the Daleks 1, Shadow of the Daleks 2. And then very, very sadly, is it Reeves, how is that pronunciation? Maurice Reeves, who we only recently reviewed in Caves of Dandrazani,
I know.
Has passed away. Now, it was the bizarrest thing was I watched The Chase, which I believe is a Star Trek Next Generation episode, which is also entitled very similarly to the Dalek story that came to mind when we were talking about Shadow of the Daleks. he played a Romulan in Next Generation. And I was quite excited at the time when that episode went out and I recognised him from Caves of Androzani. I thought, wow, he's managed to get in Doctor Who and in Star Trek. Fantastic. So much so that I did sort of start trying to look up agents to see if we could get him at FantasyCon, and then of course turns out there's absolutely no chance of getting him to FantasyCon now. It says here he appeared in the acclaimed 1984 Doctor Who story Case of Androzani, playing Stotts, the mercenary hired by Morgus to smuggle arms. I thought he was actually smuggling Spectrox, wasn't he?
No, the guns.
Yeah.
Don't you remember the guns as well?
Was it guns as well? Born in Sunderland, which would be, you could have fitted into the story we just reviewed, in the north of England, and brought up in Glasgow in his 20s while working in a flour mill. He became interested in amateur dramatics, leading to a course at Glasgow College of Dramatic Art. 3 months after getting a job of as an assistant stage manager at Glasgow's Citizens Theatre, he was playing lead roles such as Lorenzo in The Merchants of Venice. In 1966, he was cast as Martin in the film The Fighting Prince of Donegal, which led to the television play Cock, Hen and Courting Pit. Many television roles followed, including Danger USB, Nightmare Man,
Joe.
Days of Our Lives, Tutti Frutti, Rapsy Nesbitt, New Statesman. Oh, I love the New Statesman. Spender, Star Trek Next Generation,
Roman
Captain, Vanity Fair, and EastEnders.
Maybe a New Statesman.
Sorry?
What's the New Statesman
New Statesman starred Rick Mail as Alan Bastard, a corrupt conservative MP.
Just think of Yes Minister with Rick Mail.
Minister sort of. It's almost like Yes Minister with a hint of Ben Elton's type of stuff in it. Isn't it? So that was Maurice Reeves, who died at the age of 83. So sad news. But yeah, so that's Doctor Who news. I suppose I should talk about sponsors.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
No, I was going to say Lavazzi.
It could be whowon.co.uk.
No, it's Lavazzi.co.uk.
Okay, Lavazzi.co.uk.
And because of you lot, instead of typing in whowon.co.uk, I actually typed in the URL dressing sponsors. Grief. Right then. What we got here? I'm just interested to see if they actually have the episodes or the DVDs, CDs of Big Finish that I was just referring to. But no, it says here, Fourth Doctor 9.3, Shadow of the Sun. That looks like a Big Finish story, actually. That's available to buy at whowon.co.uk.
That's written by one of Matthew's friends.
Oh, was it? Oh, Matthew's writing one as well himself, isn't he?
It was written, actually, it's entirely written in lockdown.
Was
and,
it?
And formed in lockdown, so
there you go, and you can get it from whowon.co.uk, and if you want to find out about it, you can actually message Robert. Really does link itself rather well. Donna Noble kidnapped CD. Donna Noble has come home, but she's about to be whisked away by aliens, so that sounds quite good. Susan's War.
That's very good, actually. Susan War
must be quite good because it's cost £35.
It's a box set.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah. Maze of Doom, which is a toll of danger from the deep within the TARDIS, a deadly predator prowling the tunnels of London, high speed, high stakes race against time. There you go. Scorched Earth, which is a Sixth Doctor story. And new countermeasures, Dalek Gambit.
They're always good, the countermeasures ones.
Coming soon for First Doctor's Adventures 4, available on pre-order. Torchwood Iceberg, available on pre-order. Lovecraft Invasion, available on pre-order. And Third Doctor Adventures 6, available on pre-order.
I recommend the Third Doctor Adventures.
When seeing that Torchwood thing, that does rather remind me that John Barrowman has announced he's going to be in Holby City soon. So. Where he's playing, apparently he sort of hinted he might be playing a baddie character. He's very good at baddies.
Have you been watching it at all, Adam?
I don't watch Holby City, but I might watch it when he's in
Mary?
It.
Well, because the woman who is like the hospital administrator is played by Jo Martin, was in the Jadoon episode in Jodie Whittaker last series.
Yes,
you know. She plays, what is it, a past doctor or a future doctor?
Yeah, yes. Great doctor.
Just the doctor.
The doctor,
she's regular on Holby City.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I probably won't end up watching, to be fair, because Paul McGann was in Holby City last year, and I didn't watch any of his episodes either. But I might be more drawn to watching John Barrowman because he really does sort of light up the screen whatever he's in. Face it, whether I mean, I don't like his singing, but for some reason if he's on singing, I'll have to watch it. He's that magnetic a character on the screen, and I'm really disappointed. Never got a chance to meet him.
Yeah, and watch it for Jo Martin to see what else she does.
Well, I might do. I don't like getting tied into watching serial dramas that go on and on and on and on. Because I just like to dip in and out of it.
Very briefly in a signature line. It wasn't worth it, but oh well.
But yeah, that's also because I would say about him playing the baddie. We're currently watching Desperate Housewives or re-watching Desperate Housewives at the moment. And I actually, the only episode I bought of Desperate Housewives for iTunes was one of the episodes where, I think it's the episode where his character, his baddie character, gets killed off. But yeah, he's great, John Barrowman. Yes, but did you say something, Kirby?
Yes, I wanted to point out that Debbie Melrose shared a post a few days ago which is very interesting. It's a little confusing when you read it, but it's cool. Shared a post saying, 14th July 2020 is a milestone for Doctor Who fans. Rose, the episode, is as old now as Survival Episode 3 was then.
Yeah, I saw that.
As of that day, Doctor Who has been back for longer than it was away.
Yes.
So what is confusing about that?
Well
it's not confusing at all.
Well, the wilderness years seem to go on and on and on, but we're now longer than that.
But I'm just wondering what Curry finds confusing.
That's the longest silence we've ever had on the show.
As as old now as Survival Episode 3 was then. Survival Episode 3 in relation to what?
Between the gap between Survival Episode 3 and Rose.
And
Rose,
it's not confusing at all. Shut your face. Right then. So, Lavazzi, and I don't know if you're aware of this, we might have mentioned it on the show a couple of times.
Lavazzi.co.uk,
yes. Make the best Doctor Who scarves, i.e. the fourth Doctor scarves, you can get. And I don't think any Doctor Who fan cannot own one of these things. Hence, I do keep banging on about people going to the Lavazzi page. Now, the other thing to take into consideration, I own a 13th Doctor t-shirt, and it's a very lovely t-shirt, and I do like the pride motif across its chest. But you could also, via Lavazzi, get a 13th Doctor scarf to go with it. Not appropriate in the hot summer, but I have a scarf hanging on my thing, which is not appropriate for the hot summer, but it's ready for me when we hit the freezing cold winter. So, along with other items that you can get, like the Seventh Doctor Paisley handkerchief and neck scarves and
Matthew would
stuff
like that.
I'd like to see some Sixth Doctor stuff, but unfortunately they don't sell. But they used to sell the cats, actually, to be fair. I think that's one. But anyway, so Lavazzi is where you need to buy Fourth Doctor scarves and Star Trek merchandise.
Yeah, I like that scarf. It looks nice.
There's some lovely new Star Trek merchandise on there. Bobble hats, not appropriate for this time of year, but if you're in the winter somewhere, then a Star Trek motif hat, which also has United Federations of Planet logo on the front of it, which is so cool. £16.99.
If I could add something, it's like, since it's lockdown, actually, go ahead and buy the scarves.
Yeah.
And then when you get them, you just turn, especially if you're like me in Florida, just turn the air down.
But you can. Also, the other thing you can do, you can actually, if you're not wearing the scarves, yeah. But if you're not wearing them, you can use them as draft excluded. Just sort of put it underneath your drafty door or something like that. They have lots and lots of uses. I mean, if you watch the Fourth Doctor in action, the scarf itself has a plethora of good uses other than being a scarf itself. Yes, Kirby.
Yeah. Adam, did you see the Star Trek umbrella folding?
The Star Trek umbrella folding,
umbrella
did you say?
Umbrella folding. That's what it says.
Well, I hadn't got down to it because you lot interrupted me.
That's pretty cool, actually.
It's a folding umbrella.
You can always use your scarf to trip Eldrad.
That too. So there you go. That's the new Star Trek stuff is really nice. I might be tempted, you know. I love the United Federation of Planets logos that they've stuck on some of these scarves and things. Really, really good. Anyway, so that's lavazzi.co.uk, and we finally managed to get to the end of the episode unless I've forgotten something.
Yeah, what about, can we do a little quiz?
I'd love to do a little quiz, but sadly that particular avenue of enjoyment has been closed off.
We've been nattering on for 2 hours anyway.
Yeah, we've been nattering for 2 hours. Yeah.
Yes. Lillian Robbins says, I have a 13th Doctor t-shirt too. I need to get the scarf. You do, Lillian. Get it via lavazzi.co.uk. There you go. Next week we'll be...
lavazzi.co.uk.
We'll be busy next week because we're going to be doing The Two Doctors. Now, that's it's essentially a six-part story condensed into three longer parts. So this is the last long Doctor Who story.
I didn't remember that.
Well, actually... I thought the next season was the longest story.
Oh, you're talking about the Trial of the Time Lord? I'm not sure about that.
I don't count it that way at all.
And if Kirby doesn't count it that way at all, that's about it, really. So unless anybody else has got anything to add... Oh, there we go then. So until next time, thank you for listening, taking part, watching, and suffering with the show. Goodbye!
Suffering?
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
Scarecrow.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.